Yo.
Wagwan people. I sounds so unnatural coming out of my mouth.
Awful.
Terrible. I want to open up on a PSA again today. Okay, this is a real PSA. I'm not joking. This is for young filmmakers. Drugs does not make your story more interesting.
100%.
You know what I mean?
You're going through a phase. You'll lose interest in a few years when you go like really downhill and your friends give you an intervention. But drugs, there's some good films to do with drugs, Trainspotting,
Of
but
course, loads.
it doesn't make everything instantly more interesting. You just think they do because you're into them at the moment. But believe me, they're boring.
I don't even necessarily think it's that they're interested in that they're doing drugs or anything. I think it's just like they it's an immediate thing that like can catch someone's attention when you're writing a story. I don't think these young filmmakers are doing heroin, is my point. Here's why I'm saying this now is I'm on this online acting agency. I won't say the name of the website or the company who sent me this audition thing, but I am. It's going to be very specific, so hopefully they don't listen to this. I'm sure they won't. The plot was sounds interesting, right? Starts off sounding interesting. A stand-up comedian who's struggling to balance his late night gigs with his early morning radio show while harrowing a heroin addiction.
So like this would have been a good concept.
Without the heroin. You didn't
And now
need the heroin.
it kind of just makes it now more like,
Obvious. Less unique.
but also it makes it more I don't know, it's just too loaded now.
It's too much going on. It's way too much going on. Yeah, it's interesting. Just him struggling between doing a late night gig and an early morning gig. That's interesting. That's enough story. We don't need to also have a heroin addiction.
I think it'd be better if it led to not even heroin, but l which led to drug use,
I
because
guess, yeah.
maybe it eventually leads to he has to take substances to keep himself
Yeah, no, that'd be fine.
going.
That'd be interesting, but like milder substances, like he's drinking too much or something, not heroin. Because heroin just take the
You
issue
can't
about
operate.
yeah, exactly, yeah. The issue about the late night gigs and everything is no longer interesting because the man's doing fucking heroin. You know, like that just takes over the story. But him having a morning radio show and a late night stand-up gig is so much more interesting and specific than him being addicted to heroin. That's my point. I remember seeing it so much as well when I was doing short films in Cork, is whenever I'd have an audition, it would always be about the lead character or two characters having a drug addiction. It's just, I don't know what that is. It's like you can tell from the writing of it, they don't know what they're writing about either. Write what you know is another important factor
100%.
there. You know what I mean?
I
Like,
mean, Jesse and Jane in Breaking Bad, it wasn't the heroin that made that story interesting. It was their relationship that made it interesting.
Yeah, and the heroin was a part of it that added to it nicely because it was well written and well developed and everything else.
But no one's watching it because, oh, heroin.
Yeah,
People are
100
watching it
percent.
because they're interested in their relationship.
Yeah, for sure. And look, Breaking Bad is obviously very much about drugs, but it's written very well. You know what I mean? It fits in naturally. It's not like the crystal meth comes out of nowhere. It comes in very authentically. But yeah, I find that such a thing with young filmmakers. They think their story is more interesting if it has drugs. It's like, no, just trust your story without it. Especially that example I just gave. I think that story is so interesting without the drugs. The heroin is just like, it's that Blake Snyder quote of like too much magic. Like there's just too much going on. That because there being too much going on, nothing's interesting. You know what I mean? Because you're not focused. Yeah, that's just the PSA that I wanted to jump into. I was so keen on that short film until I saw heroin. I was like, nah, screw this. You know what I mean? But yeah, a very important PSA. Guys, welcome to Dylan and Sebastian Have a Simpsons podcast. The podcast myself and Sebastian here do to keep in touch.
Pretty much.
I couldn't think of
Low
anything
key.
low key, yeah. I couldn't think of anything related to the episode, so I just came up with that instead. It is funny though, people probably wouldn't know, I don't think we ever mentioned it, but there was a period, I guess like end of season 33, beginning of 34, where we were living together. That has been the case past couple of months, and I would say the last like yeah, five or six podcasts. Doing this podcast was the only way I saw you.
It's been like
Yeah, just busy and
also
everything
an
else, you know.
excuse to see Dylan,
Of
but
course, yeah. I'm joking, obviously, we love doing the podcast
you
also.
understand when you get older and you get to 24 or 25 and you have priorities in your life and it's hard to meet friends.
Yeah, of course. It's always an unfortunate thing because we love our friends, but it's like, of like the four important things of life, family, friends, work, and love. It's like friends do have to be the ones that get pushed aside the most of those four things.
And, you know what I mean? And we both have very annoying work schedules.
Yeah, yeah, inconsistent for sure. We can get like early mornings to like incredibly late, like just all over the place. Like, I mean, so, it's tough.
I finished at 12:30 a.m. last night.
So. Shit, fair play. Thanks for coming. There you go.
I'm here at 11 a.m.
Yeah, so. For you guys, breaking my back just to talk
just,
about
just for you guys. So think about that next time you stick on this podcast. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. Here.
He works so hard for us. I haven't been appreciating him enough. But
this,
anyhow,
this isn't Dylan's. This isn't sunshine and rainbows. This is Dylan and Sebastian have a fucking Simpsons podcast.
Try to change the name.
You're gonna fucking enjoy it.
Yeah,
you're gonna fucking like it.
You're gonna sit down. I see you're probably commuting. Most people listen to podcasts on the commute. You're gonna sit down anyway. You're gonna listen. You're gonna fucking love it. All right. No, I appreciate you. I'm just kidding. Let's jump into the episode. Today we are covering Homer's adventure through the windshield glass. Finally, the last episode of season 34. Yes, 22nd and the final.
A very cool opening sequence.
Awesome, awesome very sequence. Cool. Yeah, great way to close out the season. So yeah, it's the show.
And also, in the episode, a brief background appearance from a certain legendary character, which I'm pretty sure you would have noticed, but we'll discuss when it comes up.
In this opening, is it?
No, it's just in the episode.
Oh, later on in the episode, yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe I didn't know.
Maybe you didn't.
Let me know when we get to it, yeah. But yeah, the opening, this is the show's 750th episode, so very cool, very iconic. Which also, by the way, it makes this an incredible milestone for you.
Why?
If you remember, the first episode you reviewed with me was the 701st episode of the show.
Interesting.
So with this being the 750th episode, that would make this your 50th podcast.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
I'm not going to lie. I may have done more.
Really? You technically have done more because there's also the recap podcasts.
Yeah. But the 50th episode I've covered.
Yes. That's crazy,
or,
right?
100th episode I've covered because Seb's Classics as well.
I guess so. That's pretty bizarre.
I'm coming to an episode, guys. Come on.
I'm fucking sweating
here
for you.
Show some support around here.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make sure of it in a second. I'm absolutely sweating. But it's just such hard work. But yeah, they made an incredible attempt here. I mean, they achieved it, of squeezing 750 characters into the intro, and it was fantastic. I made a note of some of the ones I spotted. Obviously, I couldn't possibly type them all down, but there were some cool ones that I spotted throughout. There was a sign, the billboard was just like missing persons, and on that billboard was the Babysitter Bandit, Marilyn Monroe, Sherry Bobbins, the lady who made Malibu Stacy, the lady who runs the burlesque house, and Poochie, which are all cool because they're like either characters who made a one-off appearance or like Marilyn Monroe, a character who was like once super important in the show who just disappeared. Yeah. So cool reference. In the school, like on the chalkboard, we can see Bart's babysitter from season 4, and also the child version of Hubert, who is Lisa's husband in the future in that episode. When Nelson met Lisa, when he got outside the school, we see the nerds from Homer Goes to College. Like seeing them.
Love it.
Yeah, fantastic. In the power plant, we saw Frank Grimes and Larry Burns, Mr. Burns' son. Which is cool. In the supermarket, Troy McClure was there. Nice to see him. When Marge and Maggie are passing through in the car, we can see King Homer in the trees. I'm sure you spotted that. Yeah, King Kong Homer. That was awesome. And then we cut to the couch, and there's just a bunch of characters in the sitting room, and Homer just goes, "Who the hell are these people?" And then, boom, right into the episode. We cut to Homer running out of the bank. He's absolutely furious. He's kicking the bank in anger. He kicks a sign that says 1989. Did you get that reference? Just the year it started.
Right.
The show, yeah. I assume that's why the sign said 1989. He kicks Martin's bag, and he also kicks Nelson's kick me sign. We then cut to him driving in the car. He passes the crazy cat lady. She starts screaming at him, then he screams back, and it's all subtitled. And she just goes, "For the first time in my life, I feel like someone gets me." And Homer just goes, "I'm not what you need, but I wish you well.
They covered a whole rom-com plot
They literally did, yeah, so it's true, seconds. Yeah. Like the finale of a rom-com, and yeah, literally 10 seconds. He then tries to find his phone because he needs to express his rage to Marge. He sends her a bunch of angry emojis, a skeleton, and an eggplant because he hates eggplants. And he just goes, fire, fire, fire. Ah, fire, 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 fire hydrant. He crashes his car. He's like, oh, I'm fine. My seatbelt will save me. And we just get like a little thought bubble. He uses his seatbelt to hang up his poncho against his tree in the back garden. He's like, oh, well, at least the airbag will save me. He used the airbag as a pillow. It was so stupid.
Classic Homer.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely classic Homer. Just like the two absolutely essential things you need for your car. He was like,
yeah.
How can I make these into lounge items?
And I still love that they're never going to, like, it seems like they're never going to get rid of the thought bubbles.
Oh, they're great.
There's
yeah.
something about thought bubbles that just makes a cartoon.
Totally, yeah. They're always fantastic. Like, the classic example.
You can only
example.
Do that in cartoons. Like, if you can't do that in a real life.
No, it's, yeah, it's way too unrealistic. Unless it's a show that's like very cartoony. Yeah. Like, if they didn't, like, I don't know, something like Scrubs or Community, I wouldn't be too fazed by it. But, like, yeah, typically in live action, it'd be too much. But, yeah, it's always fun in cartoons. I mean, like, the most classic example I can think of is in the Simpsons movie where she's saying to Homer, like, do not put the pig crap in, like, the huge silo of pig crap into the Springfield Lake. And while she's saying all this, he's just imagining a monkey yeah, with two symbols crashing against each other. It's like, what are you even thinking about that? Like, it's so stupid. I love it. So yeah, he crashes his car and he's like floating in midair. We see Ralph is going like, and Maggie's happy little elf doll, Gooby Woo, starts talking to him. I'm sure you know who voices Gooby Woo.
Lizzo.
Lizzo, which is the weakest part of this episode. Unfortunately, very... I think she's fine as Gooby Woo, actually. There's something else later I absolutely abhorred. But unfortunate timing, for sure.
I guess. I mean, at the time this episode came out, yeah, definitely unfortunate timing.
Well, it came out in May. At that point, she would have still been quite famous and liked. But literally, I think it was in August when the sexual assault case came out against
her. I'm pretty sure that turned out to be untrue.
Oh, did it? Yeah. Oh, I'm not very updated on this. My bad. I feel like her reputation would always be tarnished.
I think she's been cleared now.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I feel like her reputation will always be tarnished a little bit as a result, though, you know.
Sadly, there's, that's the case.
Of course, of everybody, people, yeah. It goes to
I'm
show
sure
how the media works.
Well.
Yeah, no, she's going to be fine. I mean, she had a song in the Barbie movie. She's definitely had, relatively speaking, a good year financially. But what was the point I was going to make? It's unfortunately always the case. Like, I mean, it just goes to show, I heard all about these court cases and the stories that people were making against her. I didn't hear about her being cleared.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? We only ever hear the bad stuff. It's never as big news when the person
turned out, is good.
Is good, or at the very least, they got cleared for their case. Yeah, very bizarre. I thought they were still ongoing. So there you go. My bad. Worth mentioning, she voices Gooby Woo.
And I mean, I didn't mind this character, but
I like the character.
Again, it's when Simpsons break out into song when it's not really needed, and it kind of is annoying.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
Sure.
Which did, when they broke out into song on this episode,
it
kind of annoyed me.
I like the song. I thought it was pretty catchy. I don't love her music. I think she has some things that are catchy. I didn't mind the song, to be honest. There is some things we'll get to later that I hated, but we'll get to that. And I thought she was fine, passable as Scooby-Woo. She is, like, her voice is so iconic that it's hard not to hear Lizzo.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate her. But, like, if I was to say what my least favorite part of the episode is, I would say it was her. But she tells him that she's a projection of his psyche, as he's in the middle of a very traumatic life event. She says that they need to use this time for self-reflection, which begins with finding the source of his anger. We then see a flashback. We see that he's looking to start a safe deposit box in the bank. He shows the bank clerk that he found a potato chip that looks exactly like John Travolta and needs to keep it safe, which is such a perfect Homer thing. You think he was going to put away like money or something. It's just a potato chip that looks like John Travolta.
If that actually happened, that would probably go for a lot of money.
That's a fair point, Jay. If it literally would look just like his face.
There was a, wasn't there like a cornflake It was like a cornflake that sold for a stupid amount of money because it looked like someone.
Really? I didn't see that. You remember who it was it looked like?
I can't remember, but yeah, there was a cornflake.
That's so dumb. Okay, it's so like literally the specific thing that Homer is going through in this episode has happened just with a cornflake.
Yeah.
Bizarre. The bank clerk is just so sassy and like so done with Homer immediately. He's like, oh, don't study opera, stage, and theater, they said. Work at a bank, they said. We find out that Marge already rented out a deposit box under their name over a decade ago. He just goes, wow, he's got a wife. He says he's not supposed to show Homer, but he's high, so he doesn't care.
Oh, and this is it, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's a cornflake that's,
oh, wow.
That's shaped like Illinois.
Illinois, the state, okay.
Yeah, and it's sold for $1,350,000.
I'm sorry, but that's retarded. Especially, it's. I almost wouldn't have judged it. I wouldn't have judged it as much
if
it looked
a face.
Yeah, exactly, because that's so specific. But a state.
Plus, like, Illinois and most states are shaped
like cereal.
Like a cornflake.
Anyway. Yeah, totally. Like
Texas, California. Like, anything can look like a cornflake.
Yeah, you can easily manipulate a cornflake to look like any state. That's so dumb. Hey, lucky for that guy. He had an easy payday. Set for life with that cornflake.
I just don't know how he found that cornflake.
I know,
like,
yeah.
Surely he must have gone through
the
box.
He didn't put milk into it,
because you wouldn't even look. You just pour the cereal in. Maybe he poured it in, and he was about to pour the milk, and he's like, hang on.
Yeah, that was like Illinois.
Yeah.
You have to be very aware of what states look like. I don't even know what my own county looks like. You know what I mean? That's so specific and strange. Absolutely bizarre. So he opens Marge's safety deposit box and he finds a will from Clarence Bouvier. And it's something that he never told Homer in the four conversations that they had that he left money for Marge. But we find out that he put out a trust fund to pay Marge $1,000 a month. And the bank clerk recommends rage to Homer as a coping mechanism. We then cut to Gooby Woo admitting that she did commit financial infidelity against Homer and that he does have a right to be angry. And she says she wants to help him progress his emotions before he hits the tree. We didn't see the John Travolta, the potato chip hitting the tree and getting burst into hundreds of little pieces, and he cries as that happens. The Gooby Woo says they're getting close to the source of his rage, and we cut to him eating a burger, and he's like, sorry, I'm eating my feelings. We didn't cut to the shards of glass in the car, basically. Bart and Lisa come out of the glass, and they start talking to him. They tell Homer that they knew about Marge's money. It's why Bart laughs himself to sleep every night. And Homer's like,
what? And here I've been worried sick about your night giggles.
We find out that Bart was blowing off steam one day and found out when he was a little baby, and found out Marge made $100,000 a month. And then Lisa explained to him how decimal points worked. Very, very funny. Like a little toddler, Lisa had to explain to him that it's $1,000, .00, not 100,000. So dumb. And Bart tells him that Marge hid the money from him because he's an ape-faced bug monster who eats booger sandwiches and also sucks. He's like, why, you little unreliable narrator? And tries to strangle the glass, which is funny and very relevant to what we were talking about the last podcast. Literally, one of the most recent episodes of the whole show, they literally made a reference to it. So, very funny. A funny way to do the joke, but it's not the same joke, I thought, you know? And he just goes, oh, even my kids knew I was being physically unharmed. And Bart just goes, see you at your funeral. And Lisa just goes, we'll be the kids running around painfully unaware of the finality of death. Which is funny because it's just so tragic and true. Like, if you're 8 and 10, you wouldn't fully understand that your dad is dead and you'll never see him again, you know? But he's so hurt by this and he just starts swimming towards the tree. And Gooby Woo tells him to stop being Michael Phelps so that they can find out what Marge was spending the money on. He starts imagining the worst. He's leaving to go to work, and he's like, see you later, I'm off to earn our only source of income. And Marge's robo-butler brings a caviar hoagie. And the butler just goes, my word, this is so expensive. And we see she's paying sexy handymen to do chores around the house. And she says there isn't anything that she loves more than being rich and hiding it from her husband. And the robot just goes, let us mock him through dance, and starts twerking. So though, this is all in Homer's head, obviously. No, this is real. And then Gooby Woo asks him why she thinks Marge would do that. And he says, because it's exactly what I would do. Except the Handyman would be my favorite bands. Bon Jovi, Kiss, and Men at Work, because of their excellent work ethic. I just thought that was a perfect trio. That they just all made perfect sense to be Homer's 100%. Favorite bands. They were just so accurate because they're such dad bands.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. My stepdad is a huge fan of John Bon Jovi, and he was telling me a story about seeing them live. It did sound like a nice experience, but my heart kind of went out to Bon Jovi hearing the story. As he said, towards the end of the show, he started trying out like new songs from an album he hadn't released yet. Which, to me, for a music fan, should be the appeal of seeing someone live.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh my god, unreleased track.
Yeah, exactly.
But everyone goes for the bangers.
Everyone was requesting to be on a prayer. And
you hear it all the time. Why?
You know the song inside out. Everyone was requesting Living on a Prayer. And so he said, okay, I'll give you guys one more song, and then we'll get Living on a Prayer. And he said the audience was kind of dead for that last song, because they were always waiting for Living on a Prayer, which is so sad. Like, give the new song a chance. Yeah. So upsetting. And he said, yeah, the audience went so crazy for Living on a Prayer that he sung the song again, and then it went really wild. So then he was like, okay, one more time. So he sung Living on a Prayer 3 times.
I honestly, to think about how sick we are of that song. Imagine how sick Bon Jovi is of that song.
Exactly. Fucking it's hell. His whole life.
I would want to kill myself.
Totally. Now, look, obviously, it must be very nice to be in a financial position where you're so rich off one song. Like, if they decide to just never do a new song again, he'll be fine just off Living on a Prayer alone. That must be a nice position to be in. But, yeah, it must suck as someone who is an artist who wants to make new music to just, like, rarely have people hear out your new song because they just want to hear that
also,
again. Also, you know,
imagine being such a low common denominator that you're one of those people at a Bon Jovi gig that's just shouting Living on a Prayer.
I know.
How boring must your life be? Like,
especially how much you pay for a concert.
Oh my god.
That, like, you're requesting the song that you listen to.
Oh, it's a song we can all sing along to that we've heard fucking thousands of times.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there is something nice about that too when you're in a concert and you're all singing together. That is nice, but I also, personally, I'm more interested in the new stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the appeal of a concert for me, is getting to hear them try stuff out and, you know, doing stuff that's more raw rather than something like that is obviously, I don't know, 30 plus years old, if not older. So it's like, it's so exactly the way it's going to be forever now. Like, yeah, it's just so boring to me. But anyway, I thought that was so a perfect trio for Homer's favorite bands. Then, yeah, the song that you mentioned, I thought was quite catchy, actually. She reveals through song that Marge is spending all the money on him.
You've been wasting all your time throwing shade at Marge. You think behind your back that, yeah, she's been living large. Well, I really, really hate to burst your bubble, boo. All this time she's been spending all that cash on you.
And me? No way. I'm sure that, huh?
Homie, Homer, check your elf. You ain't too bright. I'll explain a sitch. All them problems you think you solved yourself? That was Marge, bitch. That was Marge, bitch. The time your bar tab was forgiven by Mo, that was Marge, bitch. That time Dr. Hibber reattached your big toe, that was Marge, bitch. The time he got off of that DUI, that was Marge, bitch. I think by now you know the reason why.
He realizes that he doesn't have to be mad at marriage, but Gooby Woo says that he should be mad at her dad. She asks him not to look at the glass. The glass is like seeing into the past. Because he's finally achieved inner peace. And he's like, so if I look at that glass, I could change the fate of my whole life and risk it all? Yeah, I'm cool with that. He looks into the flashback and we cut to... Cool to see some detail from Marge's dad too, which is significantly...
Very rare.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
Very rare.
Significantly the least developed member of the entire family. So much so that his voice has actually never even been consistent.
Yeah.
This voice that he did hear I thought was perfect because he sounds like a male version of that family.
Yeah, like, it has that raspy voice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We've seen in the past sometimes and he's just had, like, a pretty regular voice. I thought this was a good choice, and that like, he sound was like a Bouvier, a member of the Bouvier family, but...
I'm your dad, Marge.
I'm your dad, Marge, yeah. That kind of husky. It works. It made him seem like a really troubled male who, you know, hates his son-in-law. I thought it added that nicely. Kind of reminded me of Robert De Niro and Meet the Parents.
You can't marry Homer, Marge.
You sound more like Homer in season one. Oh, right. I love you, boy. We'll go now for Frosty Chocolate Milkshake. Marge's dad tells Marge that Homer will never be able to provide for her. He has jackass written all over him. He comes into the room and he really does have jackass written all over him. He's like, do you have any turpentine? But Marge says he's the sweetest person that she's ever met, and every time she looks into his eyes, she sees someone who will never stop loving her, which I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But Clarion says that he'll leave something in his will to make sure that she's okay, because she found every father's worst nightmare, falling in love with a true loser. Then you cut back to Homer and Gooby-Woo, and he's like, but I thought Marge's dad liked me. He was always warning me about doors hitting my butt on the way out. I love that expression as well. I've used that a few times in the past.
Such an old school.
It is old school. It doesn't even quite make sense, but I do like it. Make sure the door doesn't hit you on the way out. I enjoy it. But he's absolutely outraged that Clarence emasculated him from beyond the grave. And he's confused as to how he could remember that conversation if he wasn't around to see it. And I'm glad they addressed it, because I was also confused. I was like, how was he talking to Bart and Lisa? How did... None of that made sense to me. I'm glad that they explained that Gooby-Woo reveals that he died, and that's why he's able to see stuff that he's never seen before. And then we see that he actually died earlier, and he's like been stabbed through a freaking... very graphic, yeah. Especially jarring, because it's not a Treehouse of Horror. I didn't expect it. It was such a dark image. And then I thought it was great. It just starts going, "Doh!" like a ghost. So good. And then Ralph just goes, I'm going to see this in every dream now. is there a little pan to black, obviously. It would have been the commercial break if you weren't watching on Disney Plus. We cut out, and
use of the pan to black, by the way.
I thought it was used pretty effectively, actually. No, you're being sarcastic.
It'd be very funny if we rate our best pan to black.
Seb's pan to blacks.
That's such a new segment. That's a specific, like, lame person who's into film segment, you know. What's the best pan to black? I did think it was used well here, though, because it pans to black, and I was expecting to go back to just him and Gooby-Woo again. It was a nice transfer, taking us to a very different location in a very different third act. We just see Homer's face, and it's all white in the background. We think he's in heaven, and he's like, oh, it's so majestic and red. We pan out, he's actually in hell. He sees a red-horned angel with a pitchfork that they probably use for roasting s'mores. He's still convinced he's in heaven. But then the devil, who's also the wise guy, which I thought was perfect, the guy who works everywhere, he's also in hell. He tells him that he's in hell for committing the deadly sin of wrath against his father-in-law. He's like, so what? Everybody hates everybody these days. Which I thought was a great quote, because it's so fucking true.
Yeah.
It's so goddamn true. And then the wise guy says that he committed the 7 deadly sins in the last 10 seconds of his life. So he did wrath because of his feelings towards Marge's dad. He created sloth because he took a nap midway into dying. Lust because he was checking out a lady. Pride because he was checking out himself. Greed because he stole coins from a phone booth. Envy because he was jealous of Ralph's ice cream. And gluttony because he stole Ralph's ice cream.
Brilliant.
So good. Yeah, I love that sequence. He joins a queue to meet Satan, and while he's joining the queue, we see a group waiting to board a train to heaven, as the sins they committed are no longer considered sins in today's world.
All aboard for those damned for being gay between 5000 BC and like 10 years ago.
It's about damn time.
Make way for Miss Thing.
Now arriving. Former residents of heaven who are now considered bad by today's standards.
Well, what art I in hell? I gave the world Othello.
Yeah, and performed it in blackface.
And I was realizing as I'm talking about this, I was saying that Homer being dead was jarring because it's not a Treehouse of Horror. Actually, the whole final act of this episode could have been Treehouse of Horror.
It did, didn't it?
Super dark. I'm going to realize it now. Yeah, totally Treehouse of Horror vibes.
So we... There was in hell.
Mm-hmm.
There was like
There
was like a group of people standing like in the background. I think like the initial shot where Homer's in hell. I'd have to get it up again.
But
Frank Grimes was there.
Oh really? I didn't spot that. That's so great. Yeah, I didn't spot that. That's brilliant.
Just sad, really, that he ended up in hell.
Yeah, I guess because he happened to like hookers.
Yeah,
that detail from the Great Louse Detective that we covered on Says Classic last week. Check it out if you haven't already. Advertising for a different podcast.
Check it out on Spotify or any other music streaming / podcast streaming service.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Advertising for our own
podcast. Find us on Instagram at Dylan Sebastian Have a Simpsons Podcast.
Yeah. It's actually more specifically Dylan Seb Simpsons Podcast on
Instagram.
But if you type that, it'll probably pop up also. Yeah. worth mentioning in the middle of the podcast. We'll mention it again later as well.
But, you know,
I guess it makes sense. I guess it makes sense if you're to really read into like what Christianity considers a sin. Frank Grimes definitely had a...
He did want to kill Homer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
it's
that's
just like, how sad is that?
Yeah, totally.
And also, like, he was a perfectly fine guy.
I know.
Homer made him a terrible person in the space of, like, a day.
Yeah, and not through any of Homer's own wrongdoing, just because he couldn't stand the way Homer was and just the amount of love that man had. It was so undeserved. Yeah, that's so funny. I'm ashamed.
Simpsons just teasing us. I thought Frank Grimes would have made a little comeback there, but...
He didn't even say anything. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't even spot him. But yeah, a great little background gag as always, for sure. And yes, we cut to Homer going up to a goblin receptionist, and the goblin tells him that his punishment is being boiled alive for all eternity in a lake of blood. Homer's like, all right. He didn't wait to the long queue. And he taps the guy in front of him the shoulder. He's like, do you mind if I go ahead of you? He's like, yeah, in fact, I do mind. We got to 20,000 years later. He's still waiting in the queue, and he's moaning, and a goblin gives him a buzzer. We then cut to him walking around with a goblin. We see a goblin dancing on top of one human. Very, very dark images. Another one getting darts thrown at him while the goblins are all laughing, throwing it at him. And another one's head being used as a volleyball. He then sees a game of poker. This was great. A game of poker being played by Genghis Khan, Stalin, Mussolini, and Kim Jong-il. Great foursome there.
Oh, what I would do to play poker with them, honestly. Like, that would just be so, like...
What you would do...
Interesting, because they're all actually extremely intelligent people. So...
Of course, but they're also horrible people, so yeah. You know they would... They'd play bad. They'd play rough on poker.
What experience that would be.
I mean, yeah, I don't know how I'd feel morally having played a cordial game of poker with some of the worst people who ever existed, but hey, it would be interesting. Interesting they didn't put Hitler in there. I guess it's more interesting it was more specific.
Yeah.
People who aren't as iconic as Hitler. I'm just now realizing it was interesting
Hitler
wasn't there.
Been such an easy choice.
Yeah, I guess so. This one was more out there. Like, I mean, you knew all of them instantly, but it's not as iconic as Adolf Hitler. And then Mussolini just goes, I got the winning hand, I'm gonna win. And we see Clarence is also playing poker, and he's like, nice bluff, Mussolini. And Homer immediately goes, marriage is dead. Clarence is punching him. He's like, I'll kill you and send you to super hell. And Stalin takes him away. He's like, behave yourself, we have standards here. great quote. And Homer just goes, shut up, Tom Selleck. And the wise guy reveals that Clarence ended up in hell due to a check forging scheme. He's like, checks, remember them? Crazy. And Clarence asks Homer to take a walk with him. He's like, walking? This really is hell. And as they're walking together, we see, again, just all these dark, horrible images. A human getting grated off a cheese grater. So, so dark. A 12 show, like. Yeah. Another goblin playing whack-a-mole with a bunch of humans. So dark. And Clarence shows Homer a glimpse of the future. We see an adult Lisa introducing the family to her new boyfriend, Mercer, who designs board games. And we've all met a guy
this.
Yeah. Just absolute, hipster douchebag. A guy who acts like he's chill, but as soon as you judge something that he likes, he gets really defensive. You know, like one of those people. Yeah, but he designs board games.
You actually play that mainstream corporate garbage? You're so lucky to be meeting me today. Seriously, I am so jealous of you. Check this out. My new game is going to be a huge hit. It combines the stratego-ness of Stratego, the implicit sexual tension of Twister, and the hard driving whimsy of Tic-Tac-Toe.
As if there is anything whimsical about X's and O's, the most basic game ever. And she tells him... Actually, what was your opinion of that, actually? Tic-Tac-Toe? X's and O's or Tic-Tac-Toe?
What did I call it?
What do you call it?
Noughts and crosses.
Oh, you call it noughts and crosses. Yeah. Actually,
we
just
had
a flashback.
Discussion, yeah.
Had
one of the first podcasts.
I just had deja vu. Did we talk about this on the podcast?
We talked about it, I'm pretty sure, on like one of the first podcasts.
Oh, wow, I'm repeating myself. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We used to do... We just started doing, for what you call it, recommendation of the week, instead of doing... rock, paper, scissors, we should do knots and crosses.
Oh,
knots and crosses. That's interesting.
Game of knots and crosses.
I find it interesting that people say knot and the noughties, which I would consider a British term. But you know what knot comes from, right?
Astronaut?
No. Nought is Irish for zero.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
It's literally where it comes from. Yeah, it's bizarre. No one knows that. It's called the Naughties. Like, it's literally another thing you stole from us.
Yeah.
The number zero. Yeah, it just sounds better than zero. Zero takes too long to say. Like, we're going to call it the Zeros. Like, oh man, my favorite decade of music was the Zeros. Like, the Naughties just sounds way more catchy.
It does,
you know, it makes sense. But yeah, like, Noughts and Crosses make sense. As Exit knows, where does Tic Tac Toe come from? Because there's only two things. It's only X and O. So what's tic-tac-toe?
I have no idea.
It's obviously very American, but I don't understand the origins of it. What does it even mean? It's just nonsense.
I have no idea.
It's like a Dr. Seuss rhyme.
Yeah.
Tic-tac-toe, over my bro.
Yeah, I don't know.
As I wander to and fro. Yeah, it's such a random... I'm talking out of my ass here. I have no idea where it comes from. It could be the original name, but... I think it sounds silly.
Shut up.
Me?
Huh?
I have to keep talking, man.
No.
We've got a whole episode to get through. I mean, we're nearly done, but... Do you want to take over? What happens next?
Give me your book.
You won't be able to make any sense of my absolute chicken scratch writing. We are... here.
Tells him it's... safe.
My chicken scratch writing. Only I can read it.
Plus, they... be before they know it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my favorite scene, personally.
Yeah. That's
Well, it was worth a try.
I want to listen to that back. I know what I just said.
It's just gonna sound like you're having a stroke. I actually don't even know what I'm talking about here. Oh yeah, it's Mercer telling the family that this board game is super complicated and that they'll be out of the game before they know it. He immediately gets really mad and not interested in playing it. It's that he needs to go and yell into their washer. He leaves the room and Lisa tells him that she's going to marry him. You see him roaring, "I am the Mozart of board games and novelties!" And we didn't cut to Homer asking Marge's dad if he was ever as bad as that. And Clarence says that there was actually a period where he would have preferred him to Homer. And then Homer realizes he starts to see things from another point of view. He's like, "Your point of view? I didn't even know other people had those." Great quote. He says he realizes that he worried about marriage the way that he worries about Lisa. And Clarence just goes, "No matter how old we get, we just want to make sure our little girls are okay." I thought that was a really beautiful moment. Yeah, they really brought it together here. Because I felt for Homer the whole time. I was like, oh, marriage's dad is a douchebag. But then seeing that perspective gave that character so much...
100%.
So much to like understand why he did that for marriage and made you not dislike him. The same way that you stop disliking marriage when you find out that she was using all this money to help Homer. And just the way they related that to Homer and Lisa. I mentioned many times in the past how much I love Homer and Lisa's relationship. I just thought it all came together really beautifully there. We didn't cut to Homer getting buzzed and the goblin just goes, "We're now ready to boil you for all eternity in a lake of blood." And he's like, "Oh, suddenly that doesn't sound so good." But then the wise guy tells him that he has...
"Yeah, you just had an epiphany, Pally, which means you get to go back to your life. It's a dumb rule, but we need a 2/3 vote to change it, which is also a dumb rule. What can I say? Hell ain't perfect."
I'm glad that they didn't retcon this. They didn't make it be like, "Oh, it was all a dream, or it never happened." It basically did happen.
Yeah.
It's just this crazy, crazy, absurd thing that happened, but it's like...
in the space of a few seconds.
Yeah, exactly. It was like it made Homer a better person. He wakes up to Ralph just staring at him. He's back in the car crash from before, and Ralph just goes, "You died and went to hell. Ralph knows." It's so good. And he just... Gooby Woo is still there, but it's just a doll now. She's not talking anymore. He's like, "Thank you, Gooby Woo. I learned more tumbling through the air than I ever did tumbling through my life." Namblin then turns up along with the family in the car. They pick Homer up and Marge asks him why he sent her that angry text. But he says it doesn't matter as he has set aside his ego and learned to savor his many blessings and that marriage is the most precious among those blessings. So sweet, really beautiful. And we pan out and see that he's all whacked from the car crash and he's just speaking utter nonsense to Marge. And Marge is like, "I can't understand a word he's saying." And she bribes the ambulance man to inject him with insulin. Again, beautiful moment. We see her using the money again to help Homer. And she just goes, "I guess I can go another month without a purse." And then Gooby Woo sings that it's the end. And I really loved the episode until this one scene that I absolutely could not stand and why it had to be there. And I wish, I don't know why either, and I wish we could talk, I wish we could not talk about it. But I have to be honest and address everything that's in the episode. The episode's so good up until this point, in my opinion. We cut to the credits and it's Lizzo recording the episode with Homer. And there's some funny bits in it, I guess, but it's just utter cringe. We didn't need to have this. She's like, okay, let's move over to the part where your character slaps dad. This is Lisa, like, being the director. And Liz was like, isn't that just a sound effect? But Bart says, it's got to be real. But she says she's not comfortable slapping Homer. So then Bart starts doing it for her. And Homer's like, I don't feel safe. And he starts slapping Homer. And Liz was like, oh, this beat is fire. And he, like, she starts playing her flute. I didn't know Liz would play the flute. Didn't sound very good. Starts playing the flute, and Lisa's playing the saxophone. The saxophone did sound good. And they, like, kind of do, like, a decent rendition of the theme song. But I just thought this scene made me cringe.
Oh, it's more that it just was unneeded.
Unneeded. Well, what even is it? It's some, like, alternate universe where the characters are making the show. They're, like, actors making the show, but they're still Homer and Bart and Lisa. All very confusing.
And it's annoying because, I mean, Lizzo was good in this episode. And then it was...
This scene dampens it.
This annoying scene. But I will personally rate the episode without this scene.
I would too, because I'm not going to deny points. Yeah, me neither. I'm not going to deny that I, to be honest, hated the scene. But the episode as a whole, I thought, was pretty fantastic. Yeah, I wouldn't either. I did think the scene was really, really weak, but I wouldn't denote the whole episode just because of it, you know, because it is just a throwaway bit at the end.
And,
but yeah, final feelings towards
before
this?
Before we do quick pause, I'm going to go to... No, I'm joking.
Oh. totally reasonable if you need to pee, but yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, amazing episode.
Wonderful.
Great way to finish off. I mean, terrible way to finish
season.
It off, but
the one
a great
scene,
episode
yeah.
to finish off the season.
For
like,
sure.
It felt like a really important episode. It felt like...
It did.
One of Homer's most important life lessons.
Yeah.
All the, like, little details and Easter eggs were great.
I mean, so many I didn't even spot some, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Insane. Yeah, it was a lot to... It's one of the episodes you have to watch twice.
Totally.
There's so much to...
unpack.
Just consume.
And yeah,
the
yeah.
The story was great. The jokes just landed every time.
Totally.
And it's just nice to see a good sort of life lesson for Homer.
Mm.
And an episode that... I mean, a lot of episodes revolve around Homer, but this episode really was just Homer.
Yeah, it was like Homer's conscious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone else.
Exactly.
And it was fantastic, man. And I give it a 9.
9? Wow.
Actually, no, do you know what? I'd give it a 9.
Fair enough.
It was a fantastic episode, to be honest. Apart from the music.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's why you're giving it a 9. Yeah, I gave it an 8.5. I almost want to give it a 9 because you're giving it a 9, but I think I'll stick with 8.5. I really, really liked the game. I mean, obviously 8.5 is still a very strong rating. Like you said, a great...
And it's rare that you'll rate an episode
lower than you. I know, yeah, this is surprising, but yeah, I'll stick with it. A little switch-up for the last episode of the season. I thought it was a great Homer adventure. Like you said, there's loads of episodes where Homer's the lead character, but it's like, it's just him being a doofus for 20 minutes. It was great to see an episode that was like really about his inner conscious and, you know, his feelings, like him being challenged with his masculinity and his own emotions and rage and everything. It was such a deep exploration into his character that just made sense, you know? I thought that it was very spiritual and had like real stakes of like, even though we knew he wasn't going to die, you still felt it when you were there. I was like, when he got to hell, I was like, I genuinely don't know how he's going to get out of this. You know, like, I genuinely was at the edge of my seat, like, where is this going? I thought it was very different in a very good way. Like, it's definitely not a typical Simpsons episode, but it detracts from a different episode in a really unique way.
100%.
You know, I thought it was an absolutely epic finale. Like, for a fantastic season, that this was...
A great season.
We needed, an amazing season. We needed a great episode to wrap it all up. So this was a good, like, epic episode to conclude it with, you know? To give us an episode that was just a big adventure for the show's main character. I thought it gave a great expansion to Marge's dad. You know, in a way, it didn't feel forced. It just developed his character nicely. And now only thinking about this, after this episode, he's actually now has more depth to him than Marge's mom does, I think. Now Marge's mom is the one who needs more exploration.
I get what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We've seen Marge's mom more, but only like quick gags and stuff of her just being old and senile.
Yeah.
We now have more kind of substance to Clarence Bouvier as a character. And it does make him like more tragic and interesting that he's dead in the main timeline of the show as well. I thought all the hell stuff was fantastic. That is the highlight of the episode for me.
100%.
When they get there, how dark it is, and they didn't hold back on going really dark there, and the whole exchange between Clarence and Homer when they're looking into the future and everything, that was fantastic. I thought the daughter moment and Homer's speech for marriage at the end was just all really sweet and like really good heart there with like the whole Lisa thing, and also his speech to marriage at the end, really good heart, but it didn't feel forced either. It came in very authentically. And my final thing is I thought Lizzo was solid as Gooby Boo. I enjoyed the song personally. I thought she was good, but the last scene was unnecessary and cringe. For sure it was, but you know.
Yeah.
Other than that, I thought she fitted the episode pretty nicely. I will say she's my least favorite part of the episode just because the Homer stuff going on is so much more interesting than the guest star, you know. And if I was to be totally honest, it probably would have helped the episode if it was just like one of the voice actresses voicing like how interesting could Gooby Woo have been if it was just like, "Hi, I'm Gooby Woo. You know, you're plummeting into your death." You know, like singing all these horrible things like in a really sweet way.
I know what you mean. Know, yeah.
It is slightly distracting that it's like a very iconic voice, you know. But look, they wanted to get a big celebrity be in the show. They got her, and it's better they did it this way rather than shoving her in as herself.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I know they did at the end, but at least she wasn't like a main character in the episode as herself. Yeah, it's always better when they find a unique way to put the guest star into the show rather than just, oh, I don't know, Jason Momoa is coming to town. You know what I mean? It's like, why would she be going to a random town in the middle of nowhere? Yeah, other than that, yeah, a wonderful, wonderful episode. Great conclusion to... I know I've said it many times before, but like genuinely, I think one of the show's best seasons in years.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah,
it's been so solid. It's
not
it
has.
A bad episode.
Not every episode was perfect, but there was no episode that I came out of being like, you know, like feeling icky.
Yeah,
like I felt icky after the start of the backstage. You know what I mean? There's no episode in this season. Every episode in this season, I would watch again happily. You know what I mean? Just utterly, utterly solid stuff. Yeah. All right, we jump into the news.
Oh yeah. Dylan Simpson News, Dylan Simpson's News, Dylan Simpson's News.
Two pretty interesting pieces of news. Al Jean said, one of the executive producers on the show, said that there are very strong discussions currently happening about doing a sequel. He said, as in a sequel to the movie, obviously.
Yeah.
He said, we really want to see...
Simpsons 2.
Yeah, a sequel to the TV show. For no reason. But he says they really want to see how animated movies come back, because I really wouldn't want to do it as a streaming experience. We really want it to be a theatrical movie, because that was the point of the first one and what made it so special.
100%.
Yeah, so yeah. I thought that was cool. You know, he's saying that they're talking about it, but they're taking their time and trying to find the right story, which I totally respect.
We've got a good 10 years.
Maybe, yeah, you know, it's bizarre.
If everything's gonna come out.
Yeah, it's bizarre because the first movie came out in 2007, like, it's so old, but...
I know, it just feel... it. Like, that doesn't even feel old, but it really is.
Yeah, it is. I was 9 when that movie came out.
Like, how many... That's now...
15?
2007.
16 years.
16 years.
Mental.
And then, how long is 1989 till 2007?
They would have been in their 18th season going into their 19th season.
So it's not even, like, that far off how long it was since the show began.
Yeah, that's so true. The Simpsons movie is nearly as old as the show was when it came out. In 2 years' time, it will be as old.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And there won't be a second movie before then. There just won't be.
God.
Yeah, they'll do a movie every 18 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm fine with it, though, because obviously we get 22 episodes a year. It's not like we're starred for more Simpsons content. So it's like they may as well wait until they find the perfect story that they think suits a movie. And so McFarlane's made the point before of like why he wants to do a Family Guy movie, but the same reason wants to wait till he finds the right story. It's like, with animation, there's so much you can do in an episode that more so than a live action show, you really have to wait till you find the right story.
Yeah,
that would make sense to make an hour and a half long version of, rather than just having it be an episode, you know?
For sure.
And the Simpsons movie is a perfect example of that. Like, it really... That would have been weak if it was a 20-minute episode. It needed the full movie to...
Yeah.
Scope out that plot and make it work, like. So yeah, I'm really cool and excited to hear they're having conversations. I'm sure part of that is Disney being like, hey, we want a sequel, but I'm glad that they're not rushing it either. And the final thing, I'm sure you saw this already, is in response to the whole controversy of it being revealed that they don't want to do the Homer strangling Bart gag anymore. The Simpsons put up a post on all of their social media saying Homer Simpson was unavailable for comment as he was busy strangling Bart.
Nice.
I thought it was a great way to address it. Yeah, really funny. And yeah, let's jump into Seb's Classics.
Seb's Classicos.
Yeah.
This week, we're going for season three, so I've gone for very classic season. Went for Homer Alone.
Homer Alone. I feel like when we talk about like classic Simpsons episodes, this one is so classic.
It has some iconic moments.
Iconic moments. It's such a simple story.
Yeah.
And another rare example of an episode that utilizes all five family members well, including Maggie. Yeah.
Even Maggie, yeah. Maggie has a great part to play in this episode.
Totally. And did you, I'm sure it's just a coincidence, do you know what number episode this is?
14, is it?
Hmm? The 14th episode of the whole show? No, season 3. No, is it like what number episode of the entire show this is? No.
Oh, no.
It's the 50th episode of the whole show.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because we just did the 750-ish. Yeah. So a lucky coincidence. Yeah. Yeah, a wonderful episode. I remember this one being on Channel 4 a lot.
Really?
I don't know that they have, like, maybe certain episodes, the license for them isn't as expensive as others or something, but I remember this one being on TV a lot. So that's another thing that makes this episode, like, really nice and nostalgic for me. It's such a classic setup. Like,
it is, yeah. I mean, it's classic. Classically, Marge is overwhelmed with all the shit she has to deal with the family, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Can it be two sandwiches?
Well, then
and she's driving the car to a grocery store. She does with Maggie, and she ends up on a bridge, and she like basically parallel breaks into the middle, so no one can get past
it. Yeah, and it has one of the weirdest Simpsons guys ever. It always throws me every time. It's just so not like the show. Is when the police come up to Marge and ask her if she's okay, and she roars at them, but the roar is like clearly a sound recording of like an actual lion screaming. It just really throws me off every time. It's so odd.
Yeah.
It's so not Simpsons. But yeah, go on.
I can't remember what joke it was, but one of my favorite like jokes was when Homer comes to like
pick her up,
and the police guy, I always forget his name.
Lou.
Yeah. He says something about that he's no wonder she's.
Oh, he's no wonder she's this way. Just the moment she sees Homer is being all pathetic. Yeah.
And then they both like laugh with each other, and it's like you can tell that's like. They say that all the time.
Yeah, it's totally.
Like the go-to joke.
Yeah, wonderful little gag for sure. Nice little utilization of the town in it as well in that sequence. Like when you see Krusty sucking traffic, Mr. T, and he's like spilling his chocolate ice cream onto Krusty.
It's really like they're really making use of every character in this episode, and
for sure
getting gag after gag of all the different characters and stuff.
But while not taking away the focus from the family either, I thought it's a very family focused, family oriented episode.
So they figure what's best for Marge is to go on a holiday on her own,
To Rancho Relaxo,
and obviously the kids are to stay with Patty and Selma. But Maggie doesn't want to go, so Homer has to look after Maggie.
Yeah, and all that's brilliant. Like, Maggie, time for your 9 a.m. feeding. And he looks at his watch, he sees it's actually 11:30. He just gives like an evil laugh. Yeah, and Maggie goes missing, because obviously Maggie is obsessed and really attached to Marge. And Barney stays over at the house as well, and he's brought into the plot very nicely. So as Homer's little side character. Maggie's missing, and he's like, oh, it's okay, Homer, don't worry. You know what? I'm going to make us omelets. It's like, we can't make omelets. We got to find the baby. And they go outside, and he thinks that Maggie's underneath the concrete. He's putting her out. It's like, wait, don't do that. You'll break her arm out. It's
like a pipe or something.
He's like, the sooner I get her out, the sooner we can have omelets. It's just a water pilot. It's just such idiots. I love Marge's whole plot, too. It's like, you know, things are obviously going horribly for Homer, and like things are pretty rough for Bart and Lisa.
And you're like, you're
Patty and Selma.
You are watching it like very happy for Marge, but you're totally also, like, you watch it with a dread because you know that it's not going to go to plan.
Yeah, everything's going to fall apart.
Get to relax.
But she does. Nothing bad happens.
Well, true,
to Marge.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, nothing bad happens. Marge. Marge's whole subplot is just her having a good time. That's it. But I like that.
You can't help but think, oh, any second now, something's gonna happen.
Yeah, totally. And nothing ever does. She never even finds out about all the horrible stuff that happened. I like that she just had a break.
I like that, because I think the easy thing to do would have been she has to get quite into it to relax.
Yeah.
Or she's too fixated on the kids, and she realizes, oh, actually, I care about the family too much.
Totally.
I need a holiday.
Yeah.
And goes back. But instead, it's like they managed to hide it all.
Yeah, she didn't find out anything. She genuinely just got to have a break while the family had a breakdown around outside of it.
And we really feel for Bart and Lisa.
Yeah.
And the most disgusting bit is when, like, Paddy or Selma's like, time to rub my feet.
Oh, like, horrible. Oh. Yeah, and Bart's like grossed out, and Lisa's like, you think you got it bad? I've seen them naked.
But that's like, used to be like a normal thing, to like rub your like auntie's feet.
Really?
So genuinely.
Have you rubbed your auntie's feet?
No, but I used to have, when I was a kid, I had a childminder.
Yeah.
Right? And they lived on like this, they lived in a bungalow, and it like backed off into a farm that they owned.
Uh-huh.
But basically...
This sounds like it's going in a horrible direction.
They were quite old. I think, like, my childminder was, like, pretty much about 70.
Wow, like, is she dead now?
I don't know.
Oh, well, okay.
Or at least late 60s when she was looking after me, and I was like...
Right, she's either dead now or very old, basically.
Yeah, and I was like... I think I was there from the ages of, like, 4 till 10.
Okay. So good few
every
years.
Every day after school.
Yeah.
And I just remember sometimes...
this sounds like you're about to tell me a horrible story.
No, I remember sometimes she would like... It's not like she forced me to. But it was like expected that... I don't know what it's called. But it's this like... It's this like stick. And it's very like sandpapery.
Yeah.
And like I'd have to like rub it on like...
Their feet!
The bottom of her feet.
Ew.
To get rid of all the dead skin.
That's horrific!
Yeah, it was like a dead skin rubbing thing, and I had to get rid of all the dead skin on her foot.
Ew, that's worse than... Well, maybe not worse than if you gave her a massage, but...
Yeah.
It's still pretty bad.
It's quite bad, isn't it? And so, yeah.
I mean, you're 24 years
of age. I
don't
know if that's normal or not. I didn't know if that's, like, an old people thing.
Think of from your perspective as...
Yeah, a five-year-old.
A 24-year-old now. Imagine you asking a five-year-old to fucking wash off the dead skin off your feet. I think that's pretty fucking weird, yeah. To be honest. You weren't harassed or anything, but, like, it's weird.
Yeah.
I assume your mom was paying this woman to mind you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's not like you owed her anything.
No.
You know what I mean? She was meant to be minding you. That's weird. And the fact that you still remember it goes to show. You don't have fond memories of it, obviously.
I mean,
do you have a foot fetish now?
No, I don't at all, actually, but I find
that's probably why.
Yeah, but I find it weird, like, that I didn't really think, I've never really thought much of it.
Until just now.
Which is, but that's why the thing, the feet rubbing thing, I didn't see it as that weird.
Yeah, sure.
Because I didn't know if that's, like, something that back in the day people would just do to their auntie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're not the only person, but I definitely think it's exceptionally weird. Yeah, it's one of those things that the standard is different, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe 20 years ago, it was more tolerated. I think if a mother who has a childminder find out about her child in that today, that person would lose her business. Times are different, you know? But yeah, it's very different. Thank you for sharing that memory with us all. It's pretty hilarious now.
I'm sure if a family member listens to this, they'll let me know if that was wrong or not.
Yeah, well, Kara's angry. Fucking hell. We're not in a busy area. I had to mention that because it's definitely cut through to the audio there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty funny. I can't say I have any stories of adult women making me do stuff to their feet. Thankfully. But yeah, it is pretty gross, and yeah, you do feel for...
It is gross.
I did have a little Elmer Fudd moment there, yeah. A little Jonathan Walsh moment. It is gross, and you do feel for Bart and Lisa and that whole subplot.
But obviously, yeah, this is a great episode.
All right, we get it. My favourite joke in the whole episode is when they find Maggie. G-Wee comes in at the end, gives him the baby. And it's like, oh yeah, we're delighted to have your baby, but you're also under arrest for 3 counts of negligence. And just like kisses Homer, like, oh, you, or Homer kisses him, like, oh, you found my baby, thank you, kiss him on the cheeks. And Wiggles like, oh shucks, just don't let it happen again. He's just like so chumped that Homer kissed him that he just lets
very
him off.
Strange.
So strange, like classic Wiggle. Yeah. I love it. And yeah, really sweet moment at the end as well when
100%
when marriage comes back and she has like a a lovely photo of the family. She like takes it down, and it's just them all looking so rough, because that's what happened from just not having been with her for a few days.
Which is great. Marge wins.
Marge wins. She absolutely wins. Yeah. Things turn off terrible for her, and everything works out for her.
Yeah, which is nice to see for once.
Yeah, totally. Because usually she gets the brunt of it.
9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. It's a solid.
9 out of 10. Yeah, it's a 9 out of 10 as well. Yeah, very classic. Like it doesn't do anything unexpected for a Simpsons episode, but it does everything you'd want to see in a Simpsons episode perfectly.
For sure,
you know?
For sure.
Yeah, just a wonderful classic episode, and like definitely like clearly very intentional as their 50th episode. Like, do an episode where the family had to try and survive without a marriage is a good conflict to put them into. And
yeah,
it's all done very, very brilliantly. Yeah, wonderful episode. Also, lovely utilization of Troy McClure. Forgot to mention.
Oh, yeah.
He features very heavily throughout as like the guy, it's like a pre-recorded tape guiding Marge on how to have the ultimate relaxation at Rancho Relaxo, and all of his bits are brilliant. And I really feel for her at the end, as she's like, finally done everything that there is to do, and Troy McClure's like, remember, relaxation is what you make of it. And she just like orders a hot chocolate fudge sundae or something like that, and she's like watching Thelma Louise in the bath having the sundae and just like dips up into the bath. You really feel her in that moment, just like utter relaxation. And I was watching it being like, I'd love to get away to a resort for myself for a few days and just unwind. It'd 100%. Be incredible. Yeah, 100%. That sounds better than going home for Christmas, honestly. Sounds great. But yeah, absolutely wonderful classic season 3 episode. And now jumping into who acted in this episode.
Ooh.
So I'm in a bit of a conflict at the moment, in that I was doing who wrote this episode because of the writer's strike. Mm. I changed it to acting this episode because of the actor's strike. Now both strikes are over. What do I do? I don't know. I'm going to conclude this season with who acted in this episode, just because why not? I'm going to try, to be honest with you, I have no idea what I'm going to replace the segment with. I can't think of anything. I'm going to try and think of an interesting new thing to replace it with. But in the meantime, I still like this segment. I think it's fun. And because I hadn't done him yet, I feel like I have to give potentially the final who acted in this episode to Dan Castellaneta, who voices Homer Simpson and is just a legend beyond words. Mm-hmm. And let's just go through his incredibly fascinating history as just an amazing entertainer. So just to give you an idea of who he voices on the show, among many others, he voices Homer, Grandpa, Barney, Krusty, Mel, Willy, Mayor Quimby, Mole Man, Itchy, Kodos, and Gil. So many characters.
Many to name,
yeah, exactly. And like you, from Homer alone, it's like the show couldn't exist without him. Then tons of other characters on top of that. Then he also voices the Grandpa in Hey Arnold. Just to mention other credits he has, nice. He voiced the Robot Devil in
Hey Arnold's
Futurama.
A great show.
Yeah, Hey Arnold's fantastic. Show. I feel like that's a show that would really hold up if I rewatched it again today, because it's so mature. Like, everything that happens in that show could happen in real life. You know, it's one of those more grounded kid shows. I remember loving the movie when I was younger. Mm. The movie was great, yeah. He voiced Doc Brown in the Back to the Future animated series, which I thought was interesting. I only found this out a couple of years ago and it blew me away. He voiced the genie in the Aladdin sequels and the show.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Being someone who loved Robin Williams growing up, I genuinely thought that was Robin Williams. It's a pitch-perfect impression. If you listen to it knowing that it's not, it's
That's
so
mad.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Really impressive. He also voiced Earthworm Jim in the video games and the animated show. So, tons. Like, even if he had just those credits and not Simpsons, iconic credits.
Yeah.
Simpsons on top of that obviously just makes it so interesting. Some other interesting stuff he's done. He released a comedy album in 2002 entitled I Am Not Homer. He performed improv with Second City from 1983 to 1987. Obviously, one of the most legendary improv groups in the world. So, that's obviously how he got his start. He got hired on the Tracy Ullman show from her, Tracy Ullman, watching him perform improv. It's very interesting hearing about how he even got the part of Homer, because obviously it was a short on the Tracy Ullman show. She literally hired Dan Castellaneta and Julie Kavner, who voiced Homer in Marge, just because they were there and she wasn't bothered to like go out and cast different voice actors.
Which is interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah. Obviously it worked out, and like there's no way as you could possibly imagine doing those voices otherwise. It's just so bizarre. It's just so circumstantial that they got the biggest gigs of their life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they obviously have mansions and everything else now because of The Simpsons. Insane. He's won 4 Emmys for the Simpsons. One for Lisa's Pony, one for Mr. Plow, one for Today I Am a Clown, and one for Father Knows Worst.
Nice.
Awesome. He's written several episodes of the show with his wife, Deb Lucasta, and he now serves as a script consultant, which means he's in the writer's room all the time. So he's not even just a legendary voice actor, he's also a writer on the show now. So just a huge, gigantic part of what makes the show so fantastic. And then some of his live stage shows that he does a lot include Deb and Dan's show, just a two-hander he did with his wife, basically. Where did Vincent Van Gogh, which is a one-man show where he played Vincent Van Gogh, and he did a play called The Bicycle Man that he did in America. And also what I found interesting is he did it in the UK. In, what was the name of the, I think it was called the King's Arms, that little theatre in Islington.
Okay.
I was so surprised when I saw it.
That's mad.
Yeah, it was in like 2006, something like that. But imagine going to see a relatively small play and finding out that one of the lead actors is the voice of Homer Simpson. Yeah, absolutely bizarre. But just clearly someone who's always throwing different challenges at him. Really interesting to see. And that's like top three episodes of the show for him. Hard to pick because he's literally an important part of every single episode of the show. He's the only voice actor as well to feature in every single episode. Fun fact. But I just picked three at the top of my head that are like just incredible performances from him. First I went for Homer and Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy, which is in season 6. The one where they make like that drink that makes men better at sex.
Oh yeah.
And they like go around the road like selling that drink. I think the dynamic between Homer and Grandpa in that episode is so wonderful, the way they expand on it and like the arguments they have and stuff, and the fact that that is literally just him is so impressive. Like, he is Homer and Grandpa. Number two, I went for Mother Simpson, just because of the amazing moments that Homer has in an episode with his mom. It's like some of the best acting I think he's done as Homer. And then number one, I know I mentioned this episode many times, but I just think it's one of the best explorations of Homer as a character. And again, Dan's performance in it is spectacular. Eternal Moonshine of the Simpson Mind, in season 19, which is the one where he has the forget-me shot and he can't remember where the family went. He wakes up and his family aren't there and he has to find out where they went, basically. Dan's performance episode is amazing. There's a beautiful exploration of Homer as a character. And like I said, you couldn't have the show without him. So potentially my last time doing this segment, it had to be Dan Castellaneta, because just what an absolute legend. Yeah. All right, let's jump into the recommendation of the week. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, let's go.
Nice. After you.
Yeah, I think for this week I'm gonna go for Saltburn.
Damn it. Me as well. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's just talk about it together then. We basically bought one.
Yeah. Amazing film. I mean, it's one of them films. It's kind of surprising because it got not a great critical reception.
It got mixed, but it makes sense for a movie like that. People either loved it or hated it.
I was very thrown off because when I first saw the trailer for this film, obviously, like, Barry Keoghan's an amazing actor, so I was always going to watch it, but he always plays a weird role.
For sure.
Like, in any film he's in a weird role. So when I saw the trailer for this,
he looked normal.
I was like, why? Oh, it's weird that Barry Keoghan's, like, playing just a normal protagonist in a film.
Mm-hmm.
I found out otherwise when I watched this film, which is, I love when trailers like throw you off like
for
that.
Sure. And that's not a spoiler, you find out pretty early on that he's not a normal guy.
And obviously I don't want to give too much away.
It's a great movie to go into totally blind, but I didn't even see the trailer.
Of this film is so original. The way Barry Keoghan's actor is written is just so in depth and so smart. And like, there is a surprise at every turn in this film.
Every scene.
Every 10 minutes, something surprises you about...
Totally.
And there's so much to learn about all the characters in Saltburn, which is the big mansion that they live in. And it's absolutely mad, but in the best way possible.
Totally.
I didn't feel great after watching this film, to be honest.
Certainly not.
It's a very unsettling film.
Yes.
It
was a really weird movie to see in a nearly sold-out screen, because afterwards it was like no one even wanted to look at each other, because everyone was just having that experience where it was like still taking the movie in, you know? A really weird one to be in a big, busy screen.
I would recommend maybe watching an episode of The Simpsons after this, just to cheer yourself up.
Yes, be lighthearted, for
sure. Or listening to an episode of Dylan Sebastian and the Simpsons podcast.
Yeah.
That you can find on any music streaming or podcast streaming app.
Totally. And if you're at the cinema, you probably don't have easy access to a TV right after, but you have your headphones, pop on the old headphones, throw on a bit of Dylan Sebastian and the Simpsons podcast, and lighten the mood.
And if you want to keep track of new episodes and everything, you can follow us on Spotify, and you can put notifications on
follow.
Any post. But, and follow us on Instagram at Dylan Sebastian and the Simpsons podcast.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That is my recommendation. I think perfect viewing is watching Saltburn, and then listening to our podcast.
I'd recommend Dylan Sebastian and Simpsons podcast.
What you say? Oh, to be fair, I actually did listen to Mary Norman and Sam Murrow's podcast right after watching Saltburn. Yeah. That was a good way to wind down. Just listen to something that's pure silly because it's so goddamn dark and does leave you feeling a little gross. Because again, I don't want to give it too much away, but like, he is an absolutely despicable guy.
Ugh.
But you root for him the whole time.
Yeah.
You know,
and which is the most one of the most amazing
things
about the writing of this film.
Oh, totally,
He is one of the worst people you've ever seen.
Yeah,
and you root for him because everyone else is also a scumbag.
I mean, that's true. Everyone else in the movie is also a scumbag. Yeah, utterly. And I have a very good theory about what the movie's about, but I don't want to say it here because it would give away the movie. But you could write a thesis on it. Like, there's just so much happening in this film, and so much that's not being said. Like, the dialogue is so subtle in the best way, you know. I like that it's not shoving a message down your throat. Like, even her last movie, Emerald Fennel, Promising Young Woman, I did like that movie, but it does shove the message down your throat
for sure,
whereas this movie, its message is done very subtly. You know, I think she's gotten so much more mature as a filmmaker just after one movie, you
100%.
know. Yeah, massively. Barry Keoghan, sensational. I mean, I've said it before, I think he's my favorite actor of his generation of actors. I just think he is sensational. I've never seen him not falling in. I would love to see him not play a sad loner.
my
only
weirdo
thing.
Yeah,
even in Eternals, I was thinking about that.
He was a weird
even
guy,
in that he was the sad loner who ran away from the rest of the group. Like, that's he's done it in very different colors. He's done it brilliantly in very different ways. Like, his character in this is nothing like his character in like Banshees of Inisherin or Killing of a Sacred Deer. But they're all still sad loners. I would love to see him play a normal guy. That would be interesting to see him do. I had a big argument with a guy I worked with last day who said that he thinks him playing the Joker is horrible casting.
It's really not.
Not at all.
If
perfect
anything,
pair for him.
It's absolutely amazing casting because he looks strange.
He does.
He's amazing at playing strange people.
Yeah.
I think he'd be fantastic.
I think of any actor I can think of, every part he's done has almost been like building up to the Joker. Like, he's just so obvious, like, perfect.
I can't compare it to Heath Ledger, but I think he would.
You haven't seen it yet. Yeah,
he would, in my opinion, be a better Joker than Joaquin Phoenix or Jared Leto.
I mean, I love Joaquin Phoenix. So, like, hard to say because I haven't seen it yet, and he's playing Joker again soon, obviously. But you know, I have very high hopes for what he can do as Joker, and him up against Robert Pattinson just sounds like a great combo. So I'm very excited to see that.
So it's a TV show, right?
There's going to be a TV show of the Penguin.
Oh,
Colin Farrell's character. Nice. Which I'm very excited for. Yeah, I don't think Barry Keoghan has anything to do with that, though.
Okay.
But that'd be cool, though. I mean, that's going to be awesome also, because I also love Colin Farrell. I mean, I just love seeing Irish actors doing amazingly.
I mean, this is...
And he's so good as Penguin.
Yeah, he was amazing. And anyone knows I'm not a mad superhero guy.
No, but you do like
Marvel
Batman.
And DC and stuff. But Batman? I do like... I loved the last Batman. And
me too.
This is Penguin. It's definitely something I'll be interested in.
Yeah,
watching.
I think that film hasn't gotten its due. Like, I know it was successful when it came out, but there's a lot of people that critique it. I just don't think saw it fully as what it was.
Really didn't know.
You know, yeah.
The problem is, I think people want The Dark Knight.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They don't really want it. They just think they want it.
Exactly. Because that's popular
like
opinion.
Is,
I just love seeing a Batman movie where he was a detective. That's such a big thing in the comics that they barely touch on the movies now. It's just him fighting crime and stuff, but like, he is a detective.
Yeah.
So I loved seeing a movie where it was mainly him investigating
100%.
What was going on, you know. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what more they do with that universe for sure, and definitely looking forward to the Penguin show. But yeah, Saltburn, like you said, it's better to just not talk about it, but highly recommend.
Yeah.
Just check it out, go in blind. I would even say do what I did, not watch a trailer.
Good.
Yeah, I knew literally nothing about
even
it.
Even the trailer, it's not.
It's vague.
It's,
good, though.
It's not what the film is.
What a trailer
should
be, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that was basically both our recommendations. I don't know who goes next now. I'll let you go. Do you have a second recommendation?
No, I'll let you go.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm going for something a little bit out there. The Dinosaur Hour. Have you heard of this?
No.
No. Fantastic. It's on Good British News' YouTube channel. And basically, it is an hour-long show where John Cleese covers a different topic that interests him and just interviews people based around that topic.
Cool.
But the way he does it is just, he's actually a fantastic interviewer. I mean, for an 84-year-old man, he is so articulate and well put together and just a great interviewer. And he tackles some very taboo subjects. He isn't afraid to just go there. Like, there's one episode about media where he talks about, like, a woman who the Daily Mirror put out an article about them and it killed her business. Like, really interesting stuff like that. And the most recent one I watched is about woke culture. And it interviews a bunch of people who have either been cancelled because of a joke or just some offhand comment that they made, stuff like that. And again, just the way he tackles it is so interesting. And I just admire the balls off him, that he's not afraid to just go there.
100%.
It's really, really interesting. It's so cool to see John Cleese do something so interesting and so different than what he's done before so late in his career. They're all an hour long. They're all on, yeah, Good British News' YouTube channel. You just go onto their playlist and all the episodes will be there. Really fascinating. There's also an episode where he talks to Stephen Fry about AI. Stephen Fry has some great takes on AI. Just really cool, topical stuff. He makes it fun and lighthearted, as John Cleese would. It's playful, but he's still not afraid to get, like, really in-depth in topics. Yeah. So, well worth the watch, for sure. The Dinosaur Hour, really good.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic show. Cool. Yeah, anything else from you this week?
Yeah, I wanted to recommend a musician.
Okay.
I obviously like jazz music,
mm-hmm.
But in particular, I think my favorite, like, sort of jazz music instrument would be piano.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought that.
I love the piano in
jazz.
What
about saxophone?
I love all of it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but I think, like, my go-to would be piano. If I was to be a jazz musician, I would want to play the piano.
Sure, I get that.
But I love Bill Evans, who's a very iconic jazz pianist. But recently I've really gotten into Thelonious Monk.
Okay.
Who's a jazz pianist.
What a cool name. Really, he sounds like a pianist. Thelonious Monk.
And obviously it's difficult to know where to start with certain jazz musicians, but there is an album and it's called The Complete Riverside Recordings.
Okay.
Which has some of his, like, most iconic tracks.
Nice.
It's 16 hours long. But
wow.
Because it's, like, a lot of his discography in one album.
Right.
But you could just stick it on randomly or put on a random song.
And on the background while you're cooking or something. Yeah,
it's
that's
really,
nice.
Really amazing stuff and everything's a bit different.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Thelonious Monk.
Thelonious Monk.
How do you spell Thelonious?
Thelonious.
Oh, wow. So really not what I would have thought. So that was worth mentioning. Cool.
Yeah,
awesome. I'll definitely check him out. I'm definitely, like, jazz is a whole genre of music I haven't, like, invested too much time into that I think I do want to get more into. I always enjoy when I do listen to it. I just haven't listened that 100%. Much to it.
And it's one of them where, like, jazz is one of the only sort of concerts as well where, like,
so relaxing.
If someone said, do you want to come to this random jazz concert?
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah. But if someone was like, do you want to come to this random indie band? I'd
sure.
be like, okay, well, let me listen to them first.
Sure.
See if I like
you would just go
music.
To a jazz
But jazz
blind.
Is so broad and
yeah.
so easy that you could literally go to any show and you'll enjoy it.
For sure.
You don't need to know who it is.
Yeah, and jazz is relaxing to see live as well. You can kind of, like, be sitting at a table with your drinks and talk
it's
over
lovely.
It. You know?
Lovely,
yeah, whereas if you're seeing an indie rock band, you're probably just going to be listening to the band. You know, it's
yeah.
a different vibe for sure. Very relaxing, yeah. Yeah, okay, cool.
Depends on the jazz.
Of course, it's more heavy.
You know, I could show you some very
intense
not relaxing
stuff.
Jazz.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I'm thinking about, like, your classic, like, jazz bar.
Yeah.
In, like, Canada or something. You just literally have a...
But jazz musicians would hate that you said that.
Oh, really? My bad. I feel like when you watch movies and stuff, it's always, like,
well,
people
yeah.
having, like, a glass of wine
yeah.
and talking over it. Not, like, literally shouting or anything, like having, like, a little chill chat and letting the vibrancy of the
and
music
there's a spectrum to it there's
yeah of course like you let the vibrancy of the movie can of the music inform the chat
yeah.
you know yeah no, I find the idea of that really relaxing but yeah let's wrap it up with the questions. Two questions this week, both very much on topic for what this podcast is. I'm going to do this one first because I think you won't have an answer. I think you definitely won't have an answer. Simpsons shit posts and stuff, a very funny meme page
yeah.
that's asked us questions before. Just says, do you listen to any other Simpsons podcasts? I'm sure the answer for you is just no.
I don't.
You don't, yeah.
Don't, no.
Honest.
To be honest.
Yeah, there's loads of great ones out there.
Four Finger Discount is the go-to, right?
Four Finger Discount is the GOAT. I love those guys. I still listen to them now. I actually listened to them before recording the podcast now, just as like a little inspiration of like what I want this podcast to become, you know, just because they're legends and like they've literally made a living for themselves just talking about The Simpsons, which I find so admirable and cool. They're fantastic, and I think, you know, they're an excellent gateway into the weird world of Simpsons podcasting, which there's just so much of now. They're fantastic, they're very funny Aussie men, Dando and Mitch, very, very fun guys. That's one I listen to the most. That's the only one I listen to regularly, because most Simpsons podcasts are like, they start from episode one and go from there, and I don't really want to do that for a bunch of different podcasts. I'm comfortable just doing that for a Four Finger Discount. But a Simpsons podcast that's a little different, that's worth listening to, is, it's called Simpsons is Greater Than. It's by a guy called Warren Evans, and he basically just does like a very different thing in regards to the show in every episode. Like, he might do an episode where he talks about collectibles and the history of Simpsons collectibles, then he'll do another episode where it'll just be like him interviewing Yardley Smith, who voices Lisa. So he does like very different things,
yeah,
than just like talking about episodes. It's much broader, but like very specific and like really out. Like, he did one about Apu and the history behind that character and stuff, like really interesting stuff like that. More, I guess, historical kind of like biography of the Simpsons. That one's definitely a fun listen, very different. Yeah, they're the only two I've listened to the most. But if I was to say like the main one that like, you have to listen to, it would be this really great one called Dylan Sebastian of Simpsons Podcast, yeah, which you can actually listen to on all audio platforms, audio platforms and music platforms as well.
Yeah, and you can, I think if you listen on Spotify, if you follow them, you can actually put on notifications so you can keep...
You'll never miss an episode.
And I'm pretty sure they have an Instagram, Dylan Sebastian of Simpsons Podcast, where they post when a new episode is out.
Yeah.
And if you want, I think... you can ask some questions as well. They can. A story that, yeah.
It's a really fun segment that they have.
So you can actually feature in their episode, potentially.
Yeah, you get your name shouted out, what usually tends to happen, your Simpsons account name.
Because I discovered this really cool page, Simpsons shitposting.
and stuff.
Through that, and stuff on that episode, because, yeah.
Yeah, just fun memes and everything, for sure. Yeah. And our second question comes from Barish Arish. Probably the person who's asked questions the most.
That's our biggest fan.
I think so, yeah.
100%. Shout out to you, Bart.
Yeah, you ask great questions. And I love the page, too. It's like these great drawings exclusively about Simpson. Yeah. I love the niche and how specific his stuff is. But he goes, favorite... I love this question. Favorite moment of the podcast during season 34?
Ooh.
Yeah, very specific question. I think I know my answer right out the cuff.
Was this the season where I pretended that I was American for ages?
No, it wasn't. That was definitely Pixelated and Afraid, which was season 32. That was bizarre. What a mess of a podcast. If you want to listen to that absolute train wreck, go to Pixelated and Afraid. I remember that day we were super tired. I was helping you move.
Oh, okay.
And we had a pizza beforehand, so we were just fucking wrecked.
Worst time to, yeah.
Yeah, we were absolutely shattered, and I was trying to cover the episode, but every time you'd speak, I'd start laughing. It's just a mess, in a fun way. It's a fun mess, but it's definitely a mess.
Well, that's one of my favorite moments.
Of the podcast in general,
season
okay.
Season 34.
I mean, two great things we had this season are definitely worth mentioning is we had guests for the first time, so like having Dave and Jack was a really fun thing to mix it up. We have some other guests coming soon.
Yeah.
Teasing.
No, that the Dave episode was really good.
Really fun, yeah. I liked when you guys were talking about Formula One. Even though it was something I knew nothing about. It was like a fun conversation that you had.
The Dave episode would almost be the one that I would recommend to people to start with.
Yeah.
Because it was so early.
Yeah, it was a good gate. I guess it's a good gateway because... Yeah. Since Dave obviously isn't as informed of the show as we might be, we're going into it kind of more gently. And it was a fun episode too because it's like... Happiest Turtis, so it's like a simple Simpsons episode.
Dave,
fun
Dave has
Simpsons
a very
episode.
Good like radio voice.
He does, yeah. Well, yeah. Great voice, absolutely. Yeah, he had his own podcast.
But I'm just gonna say my favorite moment was just that episode, because even though it was a train wreck of an episode, not the Dave one, the Pixelated and Afraid one.
But his question was during season 34.
But I'm gonna instead just say that because. I think Listen Back is just a very funny episode.
It is funny, yeah.
We're not taking it too seriously. I think it's very...
No,
it's
certainly very not. My favorite one that I can recall that was during season 34 has to be Ollie's fantastic question where he said, what is your dream and nightmare trio of like a blunt rotation Simpsons characters?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We got so into that.
We did, yeah.
I think, if I remember correctly, the episode was My Life as a Vlog. And yeah, that one, I listened to that one recently, and like, that one is well worth listening. We get so into it, and I think our answers are so perfect of like, these different trios. That would be a great trio to have a joint with, and a terrible trio to have a joint with. We got so into it. It's a really fun, good question. I want more questions like that. Ones that really challenge us, make us think, because they're really fun to like explore and everything. So, yeah, at the top of my head, that one's really fun. I also really enjoyed, yeah, having Dave. I think Jack was a really fun, different energy as well.
Yeah.
Because we tend to be quite rapid. I mean, I know I talk really fast. I've been told that many a time, that Jack... You know, Jack kind of talks like this. Yeah. He kind of forced us all to slow down a little bit, that I thought was a fun, different vibe for the show.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. But at the top of my head, when I think of this having an absolute blast, it was that blood rotation question, for sure. And, that was it. Yeah, two great questions. Thank you, guys. And, I guess that's pretty much everything.
That's it. That's the final episode.
That was season 34. What a season.
We do have another episode coming, so stay tuned.
Yeah, we're going to do a proper wrap-up very soon. But what a season.
What a season.
Great episode. And thank you guys as always for listening.
Yeah.
Catch you all very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And be sure to check out the podcast on Instagram and give us a follow on Spotify and all the other stuff.
Just in case
I haven't mentioned before.
I think, Instagram, doing the Simpsons Podcast. Follow us on all music streaming and podcast streaming platforms. If you click follow on Spotify and click the notification button, you will be posted whenever we post a podcast. And they normally, I don't think Dylan knows, but they normally, because they come out automatically, they actually come out on Spotify before he even puts up an Instagram post.
No, I do know that.
The big fans know that. The real ones know that. So if you didn't know that, you're not
keep
a real
track.
Fan. So put the notifications on.
Yeah, guys. All right. Catch you on the flippity flip. Bye-bye.